I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started, so take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it.
You might need it. Good. And one more for good measure. Excellent. Okay. Well, I have notes for tonight. I don't think that's ever happened, but here we are. I want to talk tonight specifically about shame, but we're going to be speaking about it from more of a psychological perspective, although we'll see where it leads from there. But I came into some information that as I sat with it and was really looking, I feel it's really brilliant and something that can absolutely be utilized by any seeker on this journey. So if you have, hopefully you're ready with your paper and pen. If you're not, take a second and grab one, because I think you will want one. So I'm going to start by talking first from the grander perspective, because of course that's the most important. remember that all of the negative emotional states come out of shame. Okay. So shame is just a part of being, or let's say, part of functioning at the level of human consciousness. You can't separate it out. And shame kind of takes on different roles. But the most important thing always is to remember that shame has nothing to do with who you are as the eternal. Okay. Remember, as we're doing this work, there's a good chunk of the work that's very psychological, and it's needed, it's necessary. And especially at the level of work that you're doing, it's really good to get these understandings in place of how the psyche functions. Because when you have an understanding of it, now you can start looking for that in your own life. And as you look for it in your own life and you start to see it, that allows you to get one step closer to going in deeper and deeper to get to the level of the unconscious, where, of course, as we unleash, that's where we unleash all of the energy that's trapped, and that's what gives you the opportunity to actually move beyond the conditioned responses that you function from and everything else. So it has its place. It absolutely has its place. And that's why I wanted to talk about it today. At the level of the psyche itself, shame can be a positive thing and shame can be a negative thing. When someone is raised in what I would call a healthy family situation, they can function from a healthy level of shame that can act as a positive force in their lives. Okay, so let me give you an example. And this is a personal one. I'll tell on myself. So years ago, some of you may know this one already, but years ago, I had an experience with my guide. She had asked me to contact a person that we had in common and to ask a question. And it wasn't any big deal at all, but just to contact her, ask her a question. And then when I spoke with her again, she was going to, you know, I would fill her in on whatever the answer was. So I forgot about it. And the next time that I spoke with her, she asked me, so what did so-and-so say? Or no, I'm sorry. I think she actually asked me, so did you contact so-and-so? And in the moment, I think my face got hot and I was like, oh my gosh. And I couldn't bring myself to tell her that no, I hadn't, that I had forgotten. Now, of course, that was a conditioned response to the personality that I carried, which of course was, I'm the perfect student. And, you know, I'm the perfect everything, or at least try really, really hard to be. And I can't bear the thought that you would know that I failed you, because that in itself was shameful to me. So I lied. And she didn't say anything. Okay. Right. So initially it functioned as a swing for me. And I was like, whoo, like, you know, I made it through that one and I'm off the hook. As soon as I got off the call with her, I immediately contacted the other person so I could at least feel better about the fact that it, well, now, even though I kind of initially lied, I actually have contacted the person. So it's no longer a lie, right? Benevolent justifier. That's a good one. So that night I go to bed and I can't sleep. And I can't sleep, and I can't sleep, and it is just gnawing at me. Oh my God, you lied to your guide. Are you kidding me? Here you are trying to, you know, you're saying you're this wonderful student and you're putting everything you have into this dissolution work, and you turned around and you lied to your guide. You did like the unforgivable. And I couldn't live with myself. I just couldn't. It was too much for me to bear. So the next day, I contacted my guide and I wrote to her. I don't even think I could bear to just tell her in person. It was too embarrassing, right? I was too ashamed of myself. But I contacted her and I said, I have to come clean with you. I actually lied to you when I said that. I have since contacted her, but at the time I had not. I had forgotten and I couldn't bear to tell you. So then she kind of texts me back and she's laughing. And she's like, well, you know, I knew that the moment you said it. Right? And of course she did, because the energy spoke for me. My words didn't matter. The energy was like, oh yeah, she's not telling me the truth. But of course I didn't know that at the time. So what is that? That's actually a marker of, as far as psychologically, of what we would consider kind of a healthy level of shame. So when it came forward, when I recognized that, you know, in this situation, here's this other person who sees me and potentially could see me that I did something that I know wasn't right. And in that, I have to be okay with the fact that I am imperfect, right? And for someone who's raised in a healthy family situation, they already know that about themselves. They know they're not perfect, but they know that within their imperfection is a level of perfection. We're all a work in progress, right? Like maybe that's something that my mother would have said to me. Of course you're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes, and you're meant to learn from your mistakes, right? So don't hold on to it. Move forward, do what you can. Like that's beautiful conditioning for a child, because it shows them you are expected from someone who loves you deeply to be perfect. We understand that you will make mistakes. And then as parents, you know, we show our children when we make mistakes. So they see, oh, okay, if I'm modeling after a parent, they're not perfect. So why would I expect myself to be? When a parent never shows that to a child, and all the child sees is the parent is always right, always right, always right. And then they experience places where they're being shown how they're wrong. It immediately sets it up for negative shame. But in a positive situation, it's that level of shame, the hot face that I experienced, you know, and feeling embarrassed and guilty and, of course, shameful at the bottom of it, was all there to show me I had stepped out of alignment with my own core values, right? One of my core values at the time being lying is not okay. Now, we're not going to debate whether that's true or not true, but at the time, that's a core value I had, so I had to function from within it. And when I stepped out of alignment with it, it didn't feel right. And in that not feeling right, it gave me the opportunity to make it right, see? So that shame there can function as an impetus for doing something positive or for growing, right? For having another experience where you're able to mess up and then correct it, but come out of it with greater wisdom. Now, for children who are raised in dysfunctional families, it's very different. For the healthy adult, right, who was raised in a, I guess we'll just say a healthy family, a non-codependent family, that child who grows up to be an adult is capable of feeling their own feelings, right? And that's where their emotional states come from. Because they feel their own feelings. They recognize their own thoughts. Those thoughts that they believe turn into feelings. And then that's where they sit. So as an example, that person, if that person is in an argument, let's say, with their significant other has the feelings that they're experiencing. But this person won't necessarily take part in those feelings or even understand them at all, because it's not part of the structure of their emotional state. My emotional state is built on my own belief in the thoughts that are running, and then that creates the emotion, and it's mine, you see. You're experiencing your stuff, so I can look at your stuff and I'll be like, okay, and I can be logical and rational and reason through it and okay and try to meet you halfway and all that. That's all very healthy as far as a psychological perspective on how to deal with someone else who has emotions that aren't yours. So that's where you want to be functioning from. With someone who was raised in a codependent household, however, they do have an area of that functions for them, but they also have three other ways that they will experience feelings. And this is where it gets really cloudy for them. And this is why you'll have so many people who were raised in dysfunctional families who literally, if you say to them, how do you feel right now? Or what are you feeling right now? They could literally say, I don't know. And they'll mean it. They will absolutely mean it. And I remember when I first started coming up against that, it made no sense to me. I could not even remotely wrap myself around that. Because my own experience is, if I'm feeling something, I know why I'm feeling it. There's no question in my mind. I'm angry. Yeah, this is why I'm angry. Or I feel hurt. Yes, this is why I feel hurt. But to say, I don't know, just was like, how could you not know? Now, of course, I have a greater understanding of that. But at the time, it was so foreign to me because I didn't have any means of kind of understanding where that would come from. So for the person, for the child raised in a dysfunctional family, raised in codependency, or this is, and raised in abuse, what they end up with is sometimes as an adult, they can feel their own feelings. They also will feel feelings from others, right? So the person raised in codependency has no or very little inner boundaries. And because they have been imprinted and their construct is to not have solid inner boundaries, they tend to be incredibly empathic. And because they carry so much empathy, they literally will take on the feeling of another person, especially when that other person is not feeling their own feelings or they're in denial about what they're feeling. And they feel the energy coming off of that and they'll be completely overwhelmed by it. So if you have ever had an experience, or maybe you know someone who's had an experience where they could be feeling okay, and then a certain person kind of comes into the space and whatever takes place, and then all of a sudden that person who was okay before is now feeling confused, and they'll feel like they're kind of swirling and things just don't make sense anymore. That's what that is. That's carrying a level of empathy where your own boundaries aren't strong enough to hold the other person's emanations at bay without kind of getting into your own reality. And now it's in your reality, but you can't tell. So it just leaves you confused because the energy of it doesn't make any sense. Anyone here have had that experience? Yeah. Okay, good. So that's what's going on there. So remember, that's always the beauty. You know, it's only energy. And I've preached that forever. And of course, that's partially why you start to recognize these things. This is why I think this is so crucial to share with you, because now at least you have a bit of an understanding intellectually. So if you're in a position where a certain someone shows up and all of a sudden you literally, like, you're feeling confused, all of a sudden it just isn't, nothing's making sense. And you're like, what just happened? Come back to this teaching, right? It's your boundaries aren't strong enough. You're carrying a level of empathy that is, it's too much for the situation. It's not needed. It's that energy is not yours. Those person's feelings are not yours. You don't need to carry them, nor do you need to feel bad about not carrying them, right? You need to be stronger inside, internally with yourself. So if that means that you need to stand up and say, this is a little overwhelming for me right now, so I'm going to leave. And then later when I get clear, I can come back and we can talk some more, but I need to remove myself right now. Like, that's what needs to happen so that you can get yourself back to center, okay? It's important, remember that. All right, so that's the second way someone who has been raised in abuse, in codependency, in dysfunction, however we wanna term it, they feel feelings that way. Okay, the third way is that you'll have someone who will revert to how they felt as a child in with whatever's going on in the situation now. It triggers what they experienced as a child as far as an emotional state, and they literally will jump back to that state of emotion. All right, I know we have one person on right now who absolutely has dealt with that a lot. Okay. It happens when, if a child isn't allowed to express their feelings, if they're shamed for those feelings, and especially if they aren't given a voice, they jump back into that very easily. So when it gets triggered, that's where they jump back to. And now that's the emotional state that's going to come forward, okay? That's a level of carrying someone else's shame, just as the one I just told you before. You're carrying someone else's shame. It's not your own, all right? A healthy adult will have their own shame, and it's used. They don't lose a sense of internal value when they mess up. And when they mess up, they can recognize, okay, I'm only human, right? I'm fallible. I messed up. Now I need to do something to make it right. That's healthy. Okay. These other ways are not healthy. and they function in a negative manner for you. The fourth is that there's a word that we use for this, and you know, it's funny, the last 2 days I've been trying to find it and I can't find it for some reason. If anyone is familiar with doing give back work, which is something that is something I have people, I have students I've worked with who are very familiar with it, this refers directly to this. And there's a word that I cannot find tonight, and that's fine. But when you'll have, they called it the adult to child carried feeling reality. So when abuse was taking place as a child, the feelings that that child picked up from the parent, caregiver, abuser, whatever we want to say, get locked in, and the shame there is locked in place. So whenever something comes up that triggers that state, you move into that state again, okay? It's carried shame. And the thing is that with these numbers 2, 3, and 4 of how this adult experiences feelings, is all three of them will result in that adult experiencing a drop in their self-value. And that's why it's determined to be a negative thing, right? Because it results in you not being able to take action, not being able to write your own emotional state, not being able to hold to your boundaries, not being able to just function in your life. I mean, like all kinds of things. And it's all due to where you have carried the undealt with feelings, especially fear of other people, mostly your primary caregivers. So the reason I think that this is so important is because, you know, because shame is such a monumental aspect to human consciousness, and because patterned consciousness is what it is and it just continues to recycle, then we have, you know, just generation after generation of carried shame that gets passed from, you know, grandparent to now parent to now child, and then that person's child. And until you have the understanding to get in there and to see what it actually is, you can't, you know, it makes it almost impossible to go in and be able to do anything about it, to write it. Okay. And that's where knowledge is power, right? Because sometimes we have to be given the knowledge first before we have the capacity to even understand what it is we're trying to look at. And I dealt with a student a couple days ago that would very much fit into that, to have the experience all the time of, well, like, I know I'm hurting, but I don't really understand why. And I can go in and I can, you know, do processing work around this, and I can see certain things, but nothing seems to clear it. Okay, if you're carrying loads of shame that have been imprinted on you from others, well, it's no wonder that you don't know how to clear it, or you can't seem to get there with, you know, the work that you're doing that you've been shown to do. There's another component going on there. So, of course, from a grander perspective, the abuser or the caretaker who was functioning from an unhealthy level, you know, that was done in innocence, right? We know that of everyone, and we can't ever completely lose sight of that. It's a very important component to your own healing, is recognizing that they didn't do it because they wanted to or consciously chose to. They did it because that's all they knew to do. Right. You have parents who shame their kids, you know, who flat out shame their kids. And now those kids are completely victimized, and they grow up with just huge amounts of carried shame. You have parents who will teach their kids kind of the opposite. They will teach their kids through lessons around culture or skin color or money, religion, that their children are better than others, which sets a child up to experience what they would call shamelessness. Of course, in a grander picture, it's not shamelessness, because everything is coming out of shame. However, from the level of psychological understandings, that's what they would term it. So when you have a person who's actually doing the abusing, they're abusing from a space of shamelessness because they think they're better than. And then the one on the other side, the abused, the victim, experiences the shame, you see. But then that sets the child up to repeat the pattern. So now the child as an adult becomes the abuser, and we can take it back to the winning position, right? As the one being victimized, the child learns very young what worked. And what worked was the abuser. What the abuser did worked because they ended up on top, right? They ended up winning in that situation. So for as much pain as the victim experiences, what it learns is, okay, so when that happens, and I'm, you know, it's not conscious, but when it's old enough to stand on its own, when that happens, that child, now adolescent, teenager, adult, is going to do what was done to them. It's going to be the natural reaction, right? And oftentimes, if not almost every time, they can't stop themselves. It just takes off. The reactive mind kicks in, the winning position kicks in, and they do exactly what was done to them. And that, I think you all understand that. So let's stop for a minute here and just see, does anybody have a question on what? It's an awful lot of information. Anyone? You're all looking at me like, no. Okay, yay. I thought I'd be all in with you.
Okay, so the one where you said the adult child is carrying, so that's when the parent is actually projecting their shame onto you. Is that correct?
Yeah, so what happens is the parent, because the parent refuses to, okay, so let's look at it like this. You have a parent that gets triggered by something the kid does, and the parent just flies off into a rage, and you know, they're screaming, they're yelling, they're whatever they're doing. The reason they're doing that is because we know what? The trigger itself put them into pain, right? It triggered their sense of loss of control, their sense of powerlessness, because in that moment, whatever that kid just did made them feel powerless. And in feeling powerless, what happens? Well, whatever the winning position was that they learned around powerlessness is what they're going to move into. So if I'm a kid and I have a parent that used to beat me, when that parent was victimized because I did something, and then the parent beats me and tells me that I was wrong and I, you know, am worthless and a piece of crap, whatever it is, now I'm going to learn that's what works. That's how you get out of feeling bad, right? You know, forgive the language. But so the parent doesn't deal with their emotional state. They don't even go there. It's just that's why they call it shamelessness, because it's now like the parent is completely right, you are completely wrong, right? And that's all they're capable of. So the child feels the energy of the emotional state that's not being dealt with at the level of the adult. You know, if you feel powerless, there's fear there. Right? If you feel like you have no control, there's fear there. So the abuser is experiencing fear, but instead of being honest and saying, oh my gosh, like, I don't even know how to handle this. I don't know what to do with you. I don't know, you know, like, and be real about it. Instead, they move directly into, well, you know, I've got to make it right. And there's nothing wrong here. You're the problem. So we have to fix you. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yeah, so that last one, where those feelings picked up from the parents get triggered, that, like, very specifically, and I think that's a big one for students of the work, very specifically, when that one gets triggered, you will experience it as like an immediate drop in your own self-value. Can you all relate to that? Having an experience where even if you can logically say, well, that doesn't make sense, it doesn't mean you don't experience it. Just an immediate drop in your own value. or you, it's like you, Linda, I'm going to call on you for a second, if you don't mind. I probably won't be able to hear you. Try it. Are you fixed yet? Not yet. Can someone buy Linda a mic for Christmas? Okay. So if you want to write anything, then feel free. But I will just say, like, in Linda's journey, she's had a lot of that and experiences where someone is off, like, running their own thing. And she can logically know, very intellectually know, that has nothing to do with me. Like, nothing. This person is off in their own world doing their thing. Has zero to do with me. Yet, in the same instance, I can't bring myself to say anything to stop it. Linda, is that accurate? Yes. Yeah. Perfect example of that. It's the perfect example of that. There's, even though she can logically say that is not my baggage, that's not my story, that's not my karma, that's not my drama, that's not anything, simultaneously, she will feel such a drop in her own self-worth because it triggers all those childhood feelings that now she loses her voice, right? She loses her voice and she feels worthless in it. And it can, I'm hoping at this point that Linda's capable of pulling out of that a whole lot faster than she used to. Yes, yeah. But it still does run. Linda, you're typing. I can hear you.
You can hear me typing?
I can hear you talking.
Oh. I don't know what happened. Anyways, yes.
So talk away. Gonna,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's been extremely difficult, and I still find myself doing that, and it's so immediate that I just can't even catch it. But one of the things that I've recognized through the work is that I do pull myself out within, sometimes within minutes, sometimes within an hour, but it rarely goes past the next day.
Good.
So, and that was something, I would hang on to stuff for weeks and months. And, you know, I see that now as what was termed then as severe depression.
Yes.
Because everything was bombarding me.
Right.
And I was constantly being dragged out in that way, emotionally. So, yeah, I totally relate to it.
Okay, good. So we can see that it all, you know, it comes out of all of this. It just comes out of, well, the shame creates in the child, low self-worth, and little to no self-esteem. And then as they get older, it doesn't, they don't have the capacity on their own to build themselves up, right? Because that's something for a child that is facilitated by their caregivers, or is meant to be. The caregivers are the ones to, you know, a child is built with an automatic sense of self-value. They are. But children will be shamed for that. You know, oh, you know, a parent meaning well, right? Saying maybe they want to say that they don't want to see their kids get hurt later because their kids tend to think that they always have the best idea or they're bossy or whatever. So then the parent takes it on themselves to kind of knock that down a little bit because they don't want to see them get hurt later. But what they're doing is they're damaging their child's self-esteem. And once that's been damaged by the parents, it's not easy for the child to grow into a healthy adult where they'll have a healthy level of self-esteem. So you end up with kids who are, you know, can be downright cruel to other kids. You end up with kids who are utter perfectionists because they use that as the, if they're perfect, then they can always look to another person and judge them as being less than because they have themselves as their own proof that they're better than, right? So that, and then the person who's functioning, you know, in a way that's like hurtful to others, it's kind of like the same condition. It's just two sides of the same coin. They're both what is considered in psychological talk, shameless behavior. And then you've got the perpetual victim, you know, the one who's got so much shame that where do you go from there, right? So that person, when you compliment that person, they can't accept it, right? Linda, nod, yes, yeah. To say to Linda, wow, Linda, you did that so well. You have such a talent for that. She may have learned as a child to be gracious and say thank you, but inside it kills her to hear it because she can't acknowledge that that could even be possible. You're not seeing the whole picture, obviously, or you wouldn't be saying that to me. Yeah.
That was something that I can remember from way, way back and being afraid because I was out of the home by the time I was 16. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking people would say, oh, you're doing so great, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I would think, oh my God, please don't say that. In my head, I'm saying, don't say that because it's like I'm going to fall off a pedestal. I just always like, don't put me on the pedestal because I will fall. I know this. I'm going to fall. Uh-huh. And that was constantly, constantly in the back of my
Head. Yeah. When there's I'm sorry.
I have no boundaries either. And that's the other thing I was really relating to here is I had no voice to stand up and say, you know, I can accept that or I can't accept that or because I didn't know. I didn't have a clue.
Right. And how would you, you know, and that's the whole point. Like, how would you know? It's not like you through your high school, you know, courses had to take some kind of psych class on self-esteem, right? Or you would learn this kind of stuff like you just wouldn't. So of course that's where you end up. And that's like, that is the hardest. It's a funny thing. In order to do really deep dissolution work with someone like this, someone who deals with like what Linda had, it's almost like, this is going to sound like a terrible way to say this, but this is the reality of it. You start with someone who's that damaged. You have to first do the work to kind of build the self-esteem up, right? So they can start to actually feel good about who they are, start to feel better about choices that they make and can start to go, okay, so I am perfectly imperfect and I can do this and I'll get through it, right? And then get them there. Now you rip them down again. Right? Because you're strong enough to handle it. You can now take it. You don't have to do that when you have someone who wasn't raised in abuse, raised in codependency. If they already have a healthy level of self-esteem right out of the gate, you can just start chipping away at that ego and knock them down. Because every time they get knocked down, they don't drop in their self-value. They use it as the opportunity to see where they went wrong and to course correct and fix it. But if you try to do that with someone who has no self-esteem, what are they going to do with it? They've got no capacity to pull themselves out of that ditch that they're already in, right? And you're just going to push them down deeper. Yeah? Right. So, you know, it's a dance, certainly. But that was what I really wanted to share with all of you concerning that, because I wanted each of you, Kelly, I'll be right with you. I just wanted each of you to have the opportunity to really look at that information and start to look at when you experience your own emotional states, where are you experiencing them from? And you don't have to remember numbers 2, 3, 4 just to see the difference between is this my own feeling, right? And I experience a sense of shame, but I know I'm good in that. Like I can see it and I go, oh, okay, so this is one of those experiences where I'm not perfect and ooh, I did mess up. So let's make it right. That's totally healthy. Or did I just experience something that makes me feel shameful and I just experienced like a complete drop in my own value? Yeah. If you experience that, it's not your shame. You understand? It's not yours. It's carried shame. That's shame that you have taken on from another person, either another person right now, real time, because something's going on, or it's triggering past emotional states that are being brought forward because of whatever the situation is in the moment. And those are the ones you're looking for because you got to start recognizing when it's happening and start doing the work that's going to heal that and allow you to release all of that. It's not yours. You're carrying it for the other person, right? That's why we do give back work in certain circumstances when there has been so much, when a caregiver has literally forced their will upon a child, then that child gets the psyche there, it can splinter, and it can literally lock that child into that certain age. And whenever those things come, and we kind of looked at that, one of these was reminded me totally of that, that the child goes back to that moment in time and functions at that level. I mean, will function from almost the level of the child, right? So when we can start to recognize that these dynamics are running, now you have a little more in your arsenal as far as how you can deal with it, rather than sitting there and just like torturing yourself over, oh my God, like, I can't find it. What did I do? And this may not have anything to do with you at all. That's the beauty of it, to actually see, oh my gosh, I didn't do anything. This isn't even mine, right? Now we can work on why you continue to carry it, but you have to start with recognizing where it's not yours to begin with. Okay, Pelion.
Well, you actually just answered it. My question was, because the whole revert back to how you felt as a child, mm-hmm. happens if a child is not allowed to express their feelings, kind of sounded the same as when you were explaining about when the adult child is carrying the parent's shame. So it sounded the same, but when you said the whole thing about it's like a piece of the child's psyche kind of splintered off and got locked, that I was like, okay, I see the difference now.
Right. And it came, and that doesn't mean it literally splintered, because that splintering is a very real thing and it's not necessarily the case, but that is an example of where that would happen. Mm-hmm. I will say that, like, there's another person that I've worked with who as a child was not given a voice and literally was punished for speaking his own mind. And I don't mean like, in a space of being confrontational or argumentative. I mean literally just speaking his opinion in a way that any other, you know, like a normal family, you'd be like, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, so here's yours, and okay, I don't agree, but okay. I mean, like, he wasn't even allowed to do that and was physically punished for doing it. So as an adult, any time that he was in a situation with another person and that other person is wanting to have dialogue with him from the space of opposing viewpoints, he can't function. Like, you literally can't function, because as soon as, let's say it's me, I would question where he was coming from. It just re-triggered the whole thing. And of course he's not allowed to say, right? So you just shut right down. And couldn't speak forward. It would drop his sense of value so much that he literally was incapable of speaking anything forward. And then if you said to him, well, how do you feel? I don't know, right? So, and that's exactly where that comes from. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's not the case of a splintered ego, but it's a case where it triggers that drop in the self-esteem so strongly that they don't even dare to say anything. I mean, you know, Linda, and you would agree with this. Like, if I could say something, but what's the point? I'm going to be wrong anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because if that's been your experience as a child, you couldn't say anything, right? That's what you learned. And it doesn't matter if the person across from you is saying, yep, I want to hear your opinion. Like, I respect the fact that you have an opinion of your own, and I don't think we can move forward unless I understand it, because we need to work it out. That doesn't matter. Once it's been triggered, they don't have the capacity to go, you know, the rational capacity that someone has when they have a will of their own is gone. And now they're just functioning from that emotional child state that's like terrified, you know, terrified. That's exactly where that comes from. So you can see, and you know, whether it's in your own life or a friend or whatever, but you can see that dynamic, I'm sure, in someone that you know, even if it's not you or someone in your own immediate family, I'm sure you can see that dynamic out there because it's huge. It's just huge. And there's so much, you know, in our country alone, there's so much shame out there that has been placed on people. You know, of course the human condition is kind of built around it, but on top of it, we have shamed people for everything, right? And I mean, and that's what we've been raised to do. From the time you were a kid, you were shamed for everything, and then you become an adult, and now you're like, no, I don't want to be like my parents. You know, that was rough. I didn't like that so much. Now I'm a parent, and you turn around one day, you're like, God, I'm just like my mother. I can see myself doing the same thing. I swear I'd never do that. And here I am shaming my kids, telling them they're pigs, right? Because they won't clean their rooms. Or I'm shaming my kids and telling them that, you know, what is the matter with you that you can't do better in school? I expect more out of you. You know, and so it all gets placed on them with the best of intentions, right? Because we have the best of intentions as parents, and yet we end up doing it anyway. And that's the power of the winning position. It takes an awful lot of self-awareness to stop ourselves from moving to the winning position when it's running, especially as parents, because it happens so fast and the triggers are so quick and we just move right into it. Because now, remember, part of that is that you're carrying the belief in the role that you now have taken on, right? So when you were a kid, you understood the role and the difference between parent and child. You understood where you fit into that dynamic, what your rights were versus their rights. Yeah. Now, as an adult, without ever having to think about it, you've made the role reversal conscious, you know, subconsciously. But now you see yourself as the opposite. I'm not child anymore. Now I'm parent. And you remember. Remember, the mind is an incredible database. It carries everything. So you remember what parents, the rights the parents had versus the kid, and you'll step right into it because you believe you're the parent. Okay. So what are the things that we do? Well, one of the things that we do is to constantly remind the seeker, who is a parent, that they aren't actually a parent. Right? That's important. That child is not your child. Right? You're a caretaker for an aspect of the eternal, just as you, and you have agreed to function as a caretaker, to be there to impart them with wisdom and the benefit of your life experience. However, that child does not belong to you. It's not yours. And you are no better than that child. That's a very valuable thing to recognize. You know, and it's important to humble that sense of self-righteousness that parent carries, because it does. Don't you talk back to me. I'm your father. Well, if that's not the height of self-righteousness, what is? Right? You will respect me, damn it. That's a good one. As I prove to you I'm not worthy of your respect, I will demand it from you, right? And I will impose my will on you and demand your respect. Yeah. So it's really important that we, and I'm doing this tonight especially too, because I know I've got three moms on with me. So it's a good night for it, actually. And so important to remember, you know, that person that you're wanting to think of as a child may not have the capacity in this moment to relate to you intellectually on the same level that you can, right? But that does not mean that they aren't every bit the eternal as you. And who knows, you know, maybe in their own evolution, they're far more advanced than you. Who's to say? Right? Who's to say? I know Pujanda understands that. These little kids now, you know, wherever they're coming in from, they're a whole different creature. Yeah. Okay. So any other question? Pujanda, do you have anything? Yeah. Go ahead. I got you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm like, wait, am I not needed? I'm going to try I'm going to try and use my words. I'm trying to put like a question together, I guess. So this has been like literally the last year of my life, like, a lot of shame, a lot of, I was in like a, it threw me into a deep depression, like I've never experienced before in my life. Mm-hmm. And just like horrible, horrible self-talk and, no self-esteem. And I can remember like being in that place and I would just be like, where is this coming from? Like, I don't need this, cause it's not, you know, I feel like I always had like a quote unquote healthy level of, self-esteem, like not too high, but like not too low either, you know? And then it's like, it just bottomed out and I felt like I couldn't do anything right. Like everything I did was the worst thing I could possibly do. Like I'm the worst mom in the world. Like, why did I say that? Like, oh, I'm just totally screwing these kids up. Like, and I feel like it's been, I don't know, obviously, you know, my struggle with shame. and I'm starting to, I guess, like see it. And I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, I kind of got stuck a little bit on, I think what you said, what I heard was, like over empathy. Where like, uh-huh. I'll be around, I don't even know who necessarily it is, but it's like, I kind of identified with being an empath, like to an extreme. It would be like, it's so strong. Like I can't control it. And I'm not sure if that's because I stepped away from the work and my boundaries fell down, or if it's this like, carried shame that you're talking about, probably both. And that's like, that's where I am right now, is like trying to figure out where is this coming from? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Trying to focus in on it.
Yeah.
If that was a question at all.
Yeah, no, it is. It is in its own way. Yeah.
You so, get it. That's all that matters.
Right. So let me address it this way. As far as being an empath goes, because of course, outside of psychology, there's a level of the person who's here in service that is empathetic, of course. And I think both could be running for you simultaneously. I think on one level, you have empathy for the plight of humanity in general, right? Very much so. And that can lead you to a place where you could listen to the suffering of others and have it physically kind of impact you. That's not unusual at all for someone like yourself. Simultaneously, you also are probably running the other, where you have shame that has led to boundaries that are tentative, yeah? Or it could be even you moving into a new phase in your life has triggered new stuff for you that wasn't there before. So when you don't have kids, and you're a college student or a young adult and you're out in the world and like all this stuff is going, everything might seem hunky-dory. Now all of a sudden you've got kids, your responsibilities have shifted, challenges have come into your life, and it can trigger all kinds of other stuff that you experienced as a child just on the other side of it that now is coming forward for you to experience from the flip side again. And that's another level where that shame can come in, that carried shame. And if your boundaries aren't strong enough, it will impact you, and that's when you start to dive like that. So it's always important to remember on either side, however the empathy comes in, that, you know, everyone here is walking out their own journey, and you are not responsible for anyone else's journey but your own. All right, that's so important to remember. So in those moments when someone is like dumping on you and maybe they're justified. Maybe they've had just a horrendous time and they have a horrendous story to tell and they just need an ear. Like, you have to shore yourself up internally. If you don't feel like it's appropriate for you to cut them off, you want to give them the ear, because in the moment you feel that would be the best thing for them. You truly have to just continually remind yourself, this is karmic for them and they asked for it. Okay. That's important. You always have to remind yourself that doesn't matter how horrendous it is. You have compassion for the person, of course, always, right? Extremely deep compassion. But the problem with empathy is you take it on as your own. It's not your problem. It's not your story. It's not your karma, right? If you take it on too strongly, it's going to become your karma because you're going to allow it to wrap itself around you. You don't need any part of that. So there's a detachment that has to take place. Same thing if it's carried shame that we're looking at. If you're experiencing shame because you're picking it up from another person, from their unresolved emotional states, you have to, again, it's like internally remind yourself, all right, this is their crap, right? It's not personal. It's not personal. It doesn't matter what's going on. Even if he's screaming at me, this is not personal to me. This is his stuff, not mine. I can listen, but I have to stay detached. It just doesn't mean you can't engage. You can engage if it's necessary, but you stay detached and not allow that person's story, again, to wrap around your own consciousness where it becomes your story. So both of those will help a lot in what you're experiencing. At least it doesn't mean it'll stop it, but it'll help you move out of it a whole lot quicker. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't think about it kind of in terms of phases of life, quite in that way. And I'm just like, I've never felt this way before. I don't know what's happening. This is weird, right. But no, that makes total sense because I'm probably, if not about the same age, kind of at the same point of life where kind of things fell apart between my parents. That makes sense. Because I mean, I've even had conversations with Devin where it's just like, why is it so hard? Like we both feel like we're like fulfilling these stereotypes that people say, you know what I mean? Like we're like marriage gets hard. And like, sometimes it's just so hard to talk. Why is it all of a sudden so hard to talk to someone that's never been that hard to talk to? And like, what the hell happened that all of a sudden these things that didn't used to be so hard are all of a sudden, like it feels impossible to do.
So that
makes sense.
Good. And part of that too, don't forget, is the fact that as both of you are living life, making choices, you're both making choices that are triggering the other person and triggering stuff to come forward that needs to be dealt with. And so you're making choices concerning, are we actually going to deal with it? Or are we just going to continue to run away from it? Maybe one person wants to deal, the other person wants to run, and it brings all of this forward to deal with. So that has another, that's another component of why you reach that place where you're like, why is it so hard for us to even talk to each other? Because you literally have taken on now the patterning that somewhere along the way you learned, and now you're living it out. And you each functioned as the trigger for the other person to move into that. Remember, the subconscious is always looking for the perfect cogs in the wheel for itself, and you end up with it in your mate. So that's to be expected. Yeah. You'll get through it. You just got to keep working. Definitely. All right, Pielian, and you gave me a heads up. Are we time? Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. All right. This was good. Maybe we should do little lessons like this more often. This was fun. All right. I'll leave you for now. And until next time. Thank you. We'll see you. I love you. Bye.
You are divine.